WGBW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay, and always streaming on the Civic
ABC
Media app.
ABC News, I'm Andy Field. Police revealing victims' ages and names killed by the mass shooter at an Asheville private Christian school. Police then killed the shooter, ABC's Alex Stone.
The children killed were just 9 years old, identified by Don Aaron with Nashville Police.
Evelyn Dickhouse, William Kenny, Hallie Scruggs.
The adults who were killed were school staff in their 60s. Police say the 28-year-old shooter had done extensive planning with maps, entry points, and what the chief calls a manifesto.
Police identifying the shooter as a local graphic artist, Audrey Hale, a woman who identified as transgender. Investigators recovered a pistol and two semi-automatic rifles. The Biden administration agreeing with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's decision to pause overhauling that country's court system. Netanyahu's plan had sparked weeks of massive Israeli protests. This is ABC News. Some new artificial intelligence features are coming to Zoom, and it could help those who run late to meetings catch up with what they missed.
You can now ask Zoom's AI assistant to summarize what you missed in video calls that you're late to. It's part of the company's new partnership with OpenAI, which is behind the popular artificial intelligence tool ChatGPT. Zoom also says there's new features that will let users respond to messages using AI or even draft emails using the technology. It comes as Google and Microsoft integrate AI features into their own workplace software. Mike DeBusky, ABC News.
West Reading, Pennsylvania officials confirming that Friday's Palmer Chocolate Factory explosion killed 7 people, injured others. Reading Hospital CEO Dr. Charles Barbera with an update on survivors.
I am happy to announce that one of the patients that was admitted to the hospital was just discharged an hour ago in good condition.
Andy Field, ABC News.
Hey folks, keep her moving to Civic Media every Saturday and Sunday at noon for the Cripescast with me, Charlie Behrens.
We've been out here all day. We've had 5 or 6 beers and only one fish.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. Disabled voters say local election leaders in Wisconsin are breaking federal law during early voting. Advocates say early voting poll workers are incorrectly telling disabled voters they cannot have someone else return their absentee ballots for them. The special election for Wisconsin's 8th Senate District has statewide implications. Democrat Jody Habish-Sinkin says a win for her would safeguard against a Republican Senate supermajority.
That will allow the legislators in control of the state Senate to do what they were threatening back in November, which is to start impeachment proceedings against Governor Evers, Josh Cowell, even Dane County judges and the like.
Habish-Sinkin and Republican Dan Knodel appeared on the Upfront TV show yesterday. In sports, the Bucks are at Detroit tonight. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Kids, they're just different than us. They have no inhibitions, consider silverware optional, and can find fun anywhere. And when kids get really sick, they're different than us too. Until now, children diagnosed with blood cancer have been treated like many adults. Not anymore. The Leukemia and Lymphoma Society proudly introduces the Dare to Dream Project, transforming treatment and care through advocacy, education, and the largest global clinical trial for kids with blood cancer. For the first time, a specific treatment can be matched to a specific type of cancer in a specific child. It'll be the biggest medical advancement for little patients in history. Dare to dream with us. Support the Dare to Dream Project and all the work that the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society does at lls.org.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to hot gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid. Dude, did you hear about Cassie and Jake? No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development? Nuh-uh. You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Hey, son, how are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ad Council and Pivotal Ventures.
We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I had an interesting conversation with my Tea Party dentist today. Because look, the reality is we're making child labor great again. And the weird thing is he didn't believe me. Did not believe me when I told him that states are undoing a lot of the child labor laws that have been in place for decades. You know, things that when we grew up, they were there. You could only work so many hours. You couldn't use certain, you know, at certain ages, certain deadly tools. You know, you couldn't, you know, be high up on a ladder at 12, 13 years old. Common sense stuff. Did not believe me that Republican states across this country are in the process of doing, and really didn't believe me when I said Iowa wants to give employers an immunity shield. But it's what they're doing. And here to share some thoughts on this push to make child labor great again, I've asked Reed Mackey to come talk with us. Reed is the director of the Child Labor Advocacy, the National Consumers League, and also the coordinator of the Child Labor Coalition. Their website, stopchildlabor.org. Reed, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting me.
So we're in the process of making child labor great again by undoing decades of onerous rules that are harming children by not letting them work 60 hours a week in horrible conditions. Is this a good thing?
Well, no, it's not a good thing. It's really upsetting because, you know, we've had some pretty good progress over the years. You know, in the early 1900s, we had millions of American kids working in coal mines and in mills. And thanks to child labor laws, we were able to, you know, to subdue that. We had some, you know, we still had some gaps that we needed to work on, but it's disappointing to see the tide turning you know, as you mentioned, the state laws that are being introduced and that would loosen protections. You know, we expect to see some on the federal level, and you know, we just don't want to go backwards.
Now, the thing is, you know, when I talked about this, and like I said, I had this conversation with my Tea Party dentist, who was you know, adamant that this isn't happening. I can't believe it, and I explained what the bill in Iowa was about. Iowa wanted to create a system where schools and employers, they work together, because who could be against that? But in this process, the employers would be free from liability when the kids get hurt or killed. And I'm going, you know, who dreamt this nonsense up? Because my mind goes to all the abuses that I know are coming, because look at the regulations we've got and the abuses we see. Imagine going, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, the Iowa bill is the most egregiously bad state bill I think I've seen in my 15 years of doing this for the coalition. It's just really bad. And, you know, it's been somewhat amended on the Senate side, but the House bill, I think, has most of the really bad provisions in it. It's a 17-page bill with 23 provisions, and they're almost all bad. And, you know, it one of the things it does is it wants kids to work in hazardous work areas, you know, which is just not safe for them. And, you know, we really can't allow that. You know, they want kids to work in the loading docks of meatpacking plants. And this is coming on the wake of the DOL investigation that found, meatpacking violations of child labor in 13 facilities in 8 states. And kids working, basically cleaning the killing floor of meatpacking plants and cleaning saws and standing in ankle deep water with blood and animal parts and working the night shift, the graveyard shift. It's just ludicrous. And for them to have that context, knowing that this is happening around the country, for Iowa to step forward and say, yeah, let's weaken child labor laws. It just makes no sense.
But the thing is there are folks out there who just don't believe it's happening. And I keep coming back to the reality is I'm in this moment where I'm looking at the Republican Party and they're looking down the road. They want cheap labor. And what can be cheaper than getting, kids? And not my kids or your kids, but we know who they're talking about. We're talking about immigrant kids their parents are going to be working in those facilities and getting good cheap labor to fill the jobs that Americans won't do. I guess I should pose that as a question. Is this where we're heading, or am I just being paranoid?
Well, it certainly seems that it is a trend, with 6 states in this year trying to weaken protections. 2 states actually did it last year. New Jersey and New Hampshire loosened the hour restrictions. So you take that into account and then add the 6 this year that are trying to weaken protections. Arkansas passed a bill getting rid of work permits, and that was a nice double check that if a kid wanted to have a job, they could go to a state official and they could present their case and say, hey, I want to work, I want to do this job, and the state official could verify their age and could look at the work task and say, that looks safe, go ahead, and the parent would be there, the parent would know that it was safe. But now, Governor Sanders decided that they don't need that anymore in the legegislature. And so now there's, those double checks are gone. So we'll see kids working at ages that are too young doing things that they should not do.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. But I'm gonna push back on the Jersey thing because I think their bill was only in the summertime that they pull back some of the hours. So that's a little bit different, I think. And I don't think they put kids into, here's a chainsaw, go out and cut down some trees. They just pulled back on some of the hours, if I remember right.
Yeah, it's a good point, Rick. Our main concern is that we don't want to impact their education.
Right. This was, as I understand, they were just, those were just summer hours, right? Or am I wrong? Were these during the school year too?
I believe it was summer hours in New Jersey. We do want kids to work and to learn a work ethic and to experience the work culture, but we definitely don't want them to work excessive hours. We don't want to balance the labor shortage on the backs of teenagers. We want them to still have, some fun. But if they want to work, in the summer, they can work, usually 35, 40 hours a week. That would be okay, I think.
Yeah. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're with Reed Mackey. Reed is the director of the Child Labor Advocacy at the National Consumers League, also the coordinator of the Child Labor Coalition. Make sure you check out the website, stopchildlabor.org. We'll get links out on social media where you can take a look at that. In talking about kids working, because I worked as a kid. Most of my friends had, summer jobs. Occasionally you worked during the school year. There were a couple hours here and there. Some people, and this is where I think some of the arguments come to loosening some of this stuff. Some of the kids I knew in high school had apprenticeship jobs where they were in Votech, working as in the auto mechanics or the machine trades, and they would pick up a job as part of their apprenticeship program. Is there a way to make law that ensures that people have those opportunities, but it's not where we're pushing people? Does that make sense?
Well, I think, you're making a good point. I think that true apprenticeship programs have value, because we do want teenagers, some teens don't maybe want to go to college. They want to learn a trade. So if they learn, to install air conditioning systems or heating systems or learn to be a plumber or an electrician, that's fine. That's an apprenticeship program. But what we were seeing in the Iowa bill is they wanted to teach kids how to work in the loading dock of a meatpacking factory and in the assembly areas of a meatpacking factory. I can only imagine that that's putting, animal parts in a in a package and wrapping it with cellophane. Those aren't jobs that we want teens to have. You know, those aren't jobs that require training. So I think that the training programs that the Iowa bill talked about were kind of a facade. They were, you know, a fallacy that really weren't training for the kinds of jobs that we're trying to work toward.
Yeah, because for me, you know, and you bring up the kill floor, you know, you think about the past. I think about the Lewis Hines photos of all those kids that were working in mines and in the mills and in places like that, and the shortened lives that they led. I think we want kids. I think we've moved. I think as a society, we've progressed to the point where we shouldn't have kids working in dangerous jobs. They should be jobs that teach, you know, how to have a job, teach self-reliance, self-respect, you know, self-esteem, all that stuff, but not as a matter of having to support the family. And this is where my concern also comes in, of we're going to put a bunch of children in competition with their parents and cheap labor abound.
Yeah, that's true. You know, one of the things about children and teens are that they're pretty docile workers and they want to please. You know, it's often their first job or maybe their second job, and they really want to please their employer, and they pretty much do what they're told. You know, even if the employer says, oh, let's clean the killing floor with caustic chemicals, you know, they do it. And, the reason this whole thing kind of blew up was because one of the kids that was using the caustic chemicals in Nebraska was a 13-year-old, and they suffered chemical burns. And, you know, we just can't put kids into those kinds of jobs. It's just not right.
Again, you know, we're the wealthiest country in the history of civilization. At its wealthiest moment, I don't know that child labor is the way we should be moving. But I think some adults, and because I've been attacked by some people over this, some people have this romanticized version of their own childhood. And I've had people tell me, you know, I used to work 50 hours a week when I was a kid. And I'm going, no, you didn't, because you were breaking the law. We don't want that. And it's always amazing to me, you know, why kids would want to get into working so early when you got a whole lifetime ahead of you. But as a society, we shouldn't want that. And I don't know anybody who outwardly really says that they want their kids doing that, which is weird because it's always somebody else's kids that get screwed over.
That's exactly right. We did some consumer research about 10 years ago, and we asked questions about child labor. And we found out that people didn't want their kids to, you know, to do arduous work for long hours, but they didn't care as much about other people's kids doing arduous work for long hours.
Yeah, what do you say to that argument, though? You know, it's between the parents and the employer that, you know, the parents should be involved. Now, like, well, my kids have had jobs. You know, I don't get involved in that. You know, we help them get to where they needed to apply. We help them get to where they needed to do the application. But their job is their job. It's about them learning from this. Is it healthy to have parents, you know, intimately involved in the workday with these kids? And because we see this across our society, is this something that you're concerned about or not?
Well, we want parents to play a protective role. We don't want them to allow kids and teens to do dangerous work. So we would like them to be involved in that way. You know, the problem is that parents, they have no idea what's out there. They have no idea, you know, how bad a meatpacking plant can be, how bad, you know, that kids could be using pressure washers that could really harm them, or caustic chemicals. They just have no idea. Like if their kid goes to work for a landscaper, that they may be feeding stuff into a wood chipper that could, you know, grab them in within a second and pull them in and kill them like instantaneously. There are many, many ways that kids can get hurt. And, you know, we really want professionals and health and safety people making some of these rules to make sure that kids aren't put into dangerous situations.
Right. So last question I've got for you, what can we do to stop this onslaught? I mean, as you've pointed out, a number of states across the country are moving on this to try and loosen child labor laws, as a lot of those same states are loosening labor laws as a whole. So am I surprised they're going after the kids after decades of going after their parents? No. About what can we do to stop this?
We need to make some noise. You know, parents and people who care need to get on social media and squawk. they need to contact their state legislators and their congressional members and say, you know, I support child labor protections. They're important to me, and I don't want kids to be put in danger.
There you go. Good stuff. Reed, I appreciate the time. Hope folks will check out the website, stopchildlabor.org. We'll get links out on social media. Reed Mackey, appreciate the time.
Thank you.
Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. I got to tell you, this is another one of those issues where Republicans have, again, you know, positioned themselves as the party of parents only to put children at risk. I want to hear your thoughts. rick@therickssmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So evidently, April 1st, oddly enough, April Fool's Day, Elon Musk is going to be taking the blue check marks off of verified accounts. And the only people who have blue check marks are the ones who are paying him. Now, understand, Twitter used to be a place where that blue check mark mattered because you were a verified source. You were who you were. You were an organization, you know, like we here at the program, we've had a check mark for years. I've never put a whole lot of credence or anything in it, but we've had one. We had to jump through a ton of hoops to get it. Now they're throwing that all the way. They're going to remove that, and I will not pay for a check mark because she's not going to do it. But what it's done, and today's an interesting day. You had the shooting. And you had a whole bunch of people who were verified because they got the blue check mark. And on Twitter, the thought is, you know, if you had the check mark, these are people who are somewhat trusted. They're not going to, you know, throw out crazy, you know, lies. Oh boy, the blue check marks were crazy. The conspiracy theories abound, and it's harmed Elon. Twitter, according to Elon, is now worth $20 billion in just a couple of months. When did he buy Twitter? Was it, you know, October of last year? So we're talking less than 6 months. It's gone from the $44 billion he paid down to $20 billion. I'm not thinking he's the boy genius everyone thinks he is. Just kind of throwing that out there. Smart guy, an ideas guy. You know, knows how to work the government system and knows how to get, you know, money from people. But interesting. That he's, and as I said from the very beginning, destroying Twitter was never about business. It was never about it was about destroying Twitter. It was about taking something that the left had some bit of advantage in and destroying it. And he has, and good for him. It only cost him $24 billion to do it. And you know, someone asked me, and I'll be interviewed by someone at Bloomberg on whether we're going to, you know, participate in, and the answer is no. They take the check mark, don't care, didn't care that we had it, but it's I'm not paying Elon Musk a dime. Not going to happen. Now, interestingly enough, the right wing lost their mind over AOC, who put out her first TikTok. Her very first TikTok was defending TikTok, and I don't disagree with her, and I said this the other day. I don't disagree with her in that I don't know that banning TikTok is the answer. shouldn't be on government phones. But what's the difference if you got a government phone in one pocket and your personal phone on the other? They're still tracking. And, you know, immediately the right lost their mind. You know, she simped for TikTok, whatever. I forget. I don't even know what simped means. You know, she walked into an unbelievable corrupt scandal. And the reality is she brought up a really important point if you watched her video, which is, look, it's not just TikTok that's getting all of your information. It's not just them abusing your data. And we're the only country in the world that really does nothing. It is the wild, wild west what these companies can get away with and what you agree to without even knowing it. You know, these social media companies get access to your phone because you agree, because I want to use the apps. So you got to agree. You give them your photos. You give them the files on the thing. They track your keystrokes. You name it. They're tracking your web trafficking. They're building a really profitable profile so that they can advertise to you and they can sell your information. And this is where the hearing the other day is kind of important, because the TikTok CEO said, look, we're better than most at trying to ensure that we don't do as bad as the others. It's just, you know, one of those things. And she said, look, you know, to me, the solution is not to ban an individual company, but to actually protect Americans from this kind of egregious data harvesting that companies do without your significant ability to say no. These companies got you. You want to use the social media platform? You got to submit. And this is where laws come in. This is where regulations. And this is where, you know, I said the other day when they had the big hearing on TikTok, and it was a kumbaya moment because Democrats and Republicans both agreed and attacked, jumped on the CEO. You know, what about the other ones? Now, we're not going to ban TikTok. You know, on the military stuff, yeah, absolutely. On government phones, sure, that's going to happen. There's 150 million users in this country. Not going to happen. And understand, if you're worried about the Chinese communist government having access to your data, understand, 4 of the top 5 downloaded apps, this part just blows my mind, 4 of the top 5 are Chinese. This Temu, TikTok, CapCut, which I guess is a video editing app, I guess it's owned by TikTok, and Shein. These are the fastest growing global and here in the U.S. Apps. And so you're going to start banning them because they do the exact same things. And for me, again, it's the show. It's the political theater. When legislators are playing this kind of game, they're not doing the job. So Republicans, you know, because they control the House, I always ask, okay, you had your show, you got your 15 minutes, you got on fake news and you were outraged and you said your 15-second practice clip to get the sound bite out on the evening news. You got it in the paper. Everyone goes, yeah, they're tough on China. What did you propose? What legislation did you act on? The answer is so far nothing. And if they just go after TikTok, okay, fine. We went after, took one of them down. There are tons of other ones. Now, me personally, I think we need to have major, major law reform on this issue. What am I talking about, reform? We need major laws on this. And I guess it's one of those things where I guess it's because I'm older, that I remember days before the internet. Ah, yes, those days. I remember those days before the internet where you had some kind of thoughts about privacy. Where online, you have none. And I know a lot of people think if I put, you know, my name is George 4753962789, you know, whatever, or I come up with, you know, Gorilla Monkey or who knows what, you come up with some anonymous name, that you're anonymous. You're not. They know who you are because your information is available. And they can feed you whatever they want. And part of my biggest problem is the algorithms on all of these social media apps that are put in place to keep you paying attention to that item, addicted to the content, so that you never turn away. And they can feed you whatever they want. It's not about democracy. It's not about, hey, this is popular because a lot of people. No, it's popular because it's what they're shoving down your throat. And right now, it's all bad. But I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, Rick at thericksmithshow.com. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you find your favorite podcast, you'll get ours. Quick break. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 2002. That was the day that the U.S. Supreme Court handed down its decision in the case Hoffman Plastic Compound Incorporated versus the National Labor Relations Board. This case had profound importance for undocumented workers in the United States. The conflict began 14 years before, as the United Cork, Linoleum, and Plastic Workers of America began an organizing drive at Hoffman. The California company made plastic pipeworks. Hoffman retaliated by firing all the employees that supported the union. One of those fired was Jose Castro, an undocumented worker. The fired workers took their case to the National Labor Relations Board, where they won. The board ruled that the company had to provide back pay for the workers it had unfairly fired. This ruling included Castro. The company decided to fight the decision, and the case wound its way through the courts for a decade. Finally, it arrived on the Supreme Court docket. The highest court in the land ruled in favor of the company in a 5-4 decision. It ruled that as an undocumented worker, Castro could not claim back pay. Writing for the dissent, Justice Stephen Breyer warned that the decision, quote, might very well increase the strength of this magnetic force of undocumented migration. If employers do not worry about the penalties for breaking the law that protect workers, they might be more likely to hire undocumented labor. 10 years after the case, an article in the Princeton Law Review called the decision, quote, a powerful legal symbol of exclusion of immigrant workers. Trying to divide the workforce has long been a tactic of owners determined to break the power of labor. Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Until recently, kids were thrilled when their parents said, "We're going to Disney World." But that was in the before times, before Florida's autocratic governor put Disney World under the control of his state's thought police, turning it into DeSantis World. Having made kid-friendly Disney kowtow to his own magic kingdom of right-wing ideological conformity, Governor Ron is now demanding that the entire Sunshine State convert to the darkness of DeSantis World. A major tactic in his push is to rewrite the state's school books to, quote, protect young ones from having to learn that such historical unpleasantness as racism and sexism have shaped their society and are still doing so. To advance Ron Think, he has rammed his Stop Woke Act into law, requiring teachers to soften or just eliminate references to America's racial problems. Pretend it never happened is Professor DeSantis' instruction. Indeed, one educational publisher obediently followed his dictate by rewriting the uplifting 1955 story of Rosa Parks confronting the flagrant institutional racism of Montgomery, Alabama's public bus service. Before DeSantis, the publisher told the story straight. Quote, in her city, the law said African Americans had to give up their seats if a white person wanted to sit down. Parks would not give up her seat. The police came and took her to jail. Now, after DeSantification, here's the publisher's rewrite. One day, Parks rode the bus. She was told to move to a different seat. She did not. She did what she believed was right. No reference to her even being African-American or to the law requiring her to bow to any white person's demand for her seat. And no mention of police hauling her to jail because of the color of her skin. This is Jim Hightower saying, DeSantis World is where people's dream of social justice goes to die.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So a gem from the Wacko in Waco. Donald Trump said it's not a crime, not a misdemeanor, not an affair. I never liked horse face. He's talking about Stormy Daniels. That wouldn't be the one There is no one. We have a great first lady. I'm going, wait a second. You've had, never mind. Horse-faced, that's new. I think that's new, right? But, you know, hey, keep it classy. Keep it classy. I got lots of questions for my next guest, former Ohio congressman and political analyst, Bob Ney. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick.
Thoughts on the weekend spiel in Waco?
Did I watch it?
Yeah, did you watch it?
Oh, yeah. I watched it, yeah. Well, I watched as much as I could. I watched a lot of it, but as much as I could.
I'm in the same boat. I wanted to watch all of it, but it just turned into whining and grievance, and I had enough of it.
Well, I watched it because, you know, I do radio, so I could have went back through clips, but I thought, okay, I actually wanted to get my reaction as a person to what he was saying, which I kind of already knew what my reaction would be. But
and what was that?
Same old Groundhog Day, you know, maybe a few different names, but the same old, and, you know, the most perfect and most beautiful plans and the best in history and, you know, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, but I went even a little further because it was darker to me. It was more calls to direct action and, you know, this is the final chapter kind of thing, this apocalyptic kind of speech that get ready for because this is what we're going to have for the next, you know, 18 months, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's making this, you know, 2024 is the final battle. This is it. This is whether America goes apocalyptic into zombie state or whether America, you know, pulls itself out of the ashes. I mean, this is it, the final frontier, the final journey, you know, the final battle.
What's that song by Europe? The Final Countdown. Here it is.
Final Countdown.
There you go. See, now that's what he should use as his music. That would be perfect music. What did you make of the J6 choir or whatever they call themselves, splicing in them singing the national anthem and him saying the Star Spangled Banner and a lot of, I mean, it was great, great imagery and propaganda all, you know, spewed into one little bit of nonsense.
Well, I mean, it was just different, strange stuff, and they had the painter. Did you see the painter?
Yeah.
Beforehand, wildly flaying her hands and painting and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And then they were interviewing people and I don't know.
Yeah, that was boring to me. I got to move on. I got to get your thoughts on Marjorie Three Names and Clown Show going to the D.C. jail. This is something I agree with Marjorie Three Names on. We do need to clean up our jails and make them more humane. I just find it interesting that this now is when they choose to do it, when a bunch of white criminals get locked up.
Well, first of all, speaking on the jail issue, I can tell you that, you know, prison is, because I've been there, is warehousing. It's not helping in the most part for people with addiction. It's not helping to rehabilitate. And coming out from prison, it is extremely difficult to start again. And most of the programs out there, are not are really not there to help. So, yeah, I mean, I could talk about, you know, prisons all day long and how to, you know, make some changes. We have the most people incarcerated on earth. But the big thing about what they're doing, this is strictly lawmakers touring the jail where the January 6th sightseers are. Not defendants, sightseers. Have you kind of noticed, what have you seen about Tucker Carlson lately?
Oh, yeah. No, they're changing the narrative. They've been doing it for a while.
Did that kind of, you know, vanish a bit?
I liked what California Representative Robert Garcia said. He said they went to the D.C. jail at the visit, and he said, when we saw the inmates, my Republican colleagues rushed to them and treated them like they were celebrities rather than people who attacked our Capitol Police and our very democracy. He said, the actions of our Republican colleagues are shameful. And you can see it. I mean, there's this love fest for the people who were criminals, man. These are criminals.
Right. Well, this is, you know, with Tucker Carlson, I did a radio show right after that. And it's somebody I've known for a long time. He's got a radio show, podcasts and things. And he had called me and I told him beforehand, I said, you know, you can have me on, but I'm telling you right where I stand with this. And I think some people were, you know, in the business, quote, were trying to emulate Tucker Carlson. And, you know, Tucker Carlson made a case that was so false, and then calling people sightseers, taking a clip of the guy with the horns, because the Capitol Police, they didn't have the audio, you know, where they were trying to calm things down and get him and other people, you know, out of there. So Carlson knew this. He was just trying to, you know, get his name out there. It shouldn't have been released, first of all. And if it was released, it should have been released to everybody, you know. But how anybody could say sightseers. And so what I posed to this guy's radio show, I said, you and I go over to Wheeling, West Virginia. We bust the post office window out. What happens to us? I asked that question. He had to answer. We're going to jail.
Seems pretty simple, doesn't it?
Yeah. We will go to jail for busting a window out. You know, these weren't sightseers. So, but the worst part about this, it's one thing for them to, you know, call them patriots or whatever. That's bad enough. But to actually go to the jail to see, oh, what poor, miserable condition they're in, you know, if they would have not tried to destroy the Capitol and stop an election, they wouldn't be there. So I just, yeah, look,
gasoline, no, because I've been saying
food prices, you know, inflation, you know, and they're touring the jail to see how, you know, these unfortunate sightseers are doing. It just doesn't add up.
No, it adds up because they've got nothing else. So that they need this kind of division. And this is their strategy for 2024. So in looking at, you know, the kickoff from Waco of Trump's 2024 campaign, because I think everybody is saying it's going to be Biden and Trump, and I don't know that that's going to be at the end of the road, but are you seeing this kind of split screen preview of 2024 happening? Do you see this as ultimately going to be it?
I think it's part of it. Now, I'm still going to hold to the fact that Trump will not come out of the convention. If he runs in the convention, he'll win. But he's not going to come out of the convention because he is not going to run. Something, there's going to be, I don't know what, for the good of this or health, I don't know what. He psychologically cannot afford a second loss. That's just my perspective. Now, let's say, though, I'm wrong. You do have the split screen. I think there's flaws on both sides. And if this continues to be, and there's some top Republicans that have said, stop, drop 2020, stop it. If this continues, that it's completely all about Trump and all about 2020 and the same old, same old, same old, and of course he's just ruthlessly attacking DeSantis. If this continues, yes, there will be loyalists, but an average person is just going to say, you've got to be kidding me. Now, on the other hand, the Biden, and there's some flaws in this too, they're now trying to, with Joe Biden, take him to all the cities where the transportation projects are, which is okay in itself, although I think they should have beat that drum a little sooner,
yep.
But it's okay. But also they're trying to make him as the guy who, is, you know, it's calm with him. Everything is calm. Now, one problem with that is don't get so calm that you blend into the wallpaper, okay? There's got to be, you know, some fighting on some of the issues that they care about.
Yeah, and this is my problem with Biden. Look, I love what he's doing. I think he's doing a great job thus far. But I don't think in a campaign mode, the guy, again, I love him. He can't deliver a line. He can't get a line out. I mean, it just is what it is. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Bob Ney, former Ohio congressman, political analyst. I want to get your thoughts on this story coming out of Utah. Evidently, Utah is in the process of implementing a social media law for minors. Given the fact that you've got people who want to ban TikTok and these social media companies popping up, can a state do this?
Well, probably not. I mean, they can until somebody goes to court, and then it becomes an issue whether they can or not. They're implementing this social media law for minors. Now, when I looked at this, it would be the first type in the nation. It restricts children and teens from using social media without their parents' consent. Now, let me throw this out here. Who monitors this?
I don't know.
who monitors it? Well, the media companies. And how does the media company seek permission from the parents? I mean, there's so many flawed details. Now, do I believe that kids overuse social media? You bet. Do I believe, my daughter and son with their kids, they have three each, are very, very, very careful. Their iPads, they play these games on, they're restricted to, who could try to signal them. If they can't go on certain things like Instagram and be signaled by predators, they take all the precautions. Now, if parents don't take those precautions, I'm not sure how a state implements this. So I'm very curious to see how Utah, implements it to see, if they can do it as a government, what parents should be doing anyway.
No, I'm with you. But the sad reality, and yourself, you were a teenager once. If it's out there, they're going to figure out how to use it. And there's got to be a way at some point to limit that access. Much like we do with alcohol and cigarettes and everything else, there's got to be a way at which you're able to limit some of that stuff.
China has done it.
Yeah.
now China does it by, it doesn't matter what the parents think. China just shuts it all off after X, I think it's after 6 o'clock and only on weekends. China just shuts it off.
That's something never going to fly here.
No. You know why it won't fly here? I've always said this. In our wonderful country, if you actually wanted to have a revolution, the best way to do it is to ban, social media. And
turn the electricity
and take
off.
PlayStation away. Yeah. You'll have a revolt.
No, and I've said that about blue laws. You remember when you were a kid, we had blue laws. Sundays, mm-hmm. Everything was closed. If you did something like that today, there would be a revolution.
Right. Exactly. I remember the Sunday closures.
Which, again, I'm not entirely against. It's crazy. Lastly, I wanted to get your thoughts on this story from this Tim Burchett. He's a Tennessee representative. Evidently told Newsmax that our foreign adversaries aren't taking us seriously because evidently our military, too many of the men in our military and our administration, they're wearing dresses. I don't think I've seen anyone in our military wearing a dress. Did I miss something?
No, I can't say that I have either. there's a lot of stuff that's starting to go on with some of these reps. Is this the same guy that posed with his family with the
that was Ugles.
Automatic weapons?
That was Ugles.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm not saying that he didn't. I'm sure he probably did, because a lot of these ammosexuals, they need to show off their big guns. He could be one. I'm not saying that I know for certain. But I just find it interesting that these folks got this on their brain all the time.
Tim Burchett, and he did claim there's too many men that are wearing dresses. But again, I don't know of any case where that has happened. I don't know of any case where that's happened. I could be wrong. You never know. There might be one or two people somewhere, but I have absolutely never heard of that.
Yeah. They live in a world of what they think they see. instead of what they actually see. But Bob, as always,
well, of course, he was doing Newsmax too.
Well, this is the other part of that. Yeah, you gotta throw that out there. As always, appreciate the time, man.
Thank you.
Our good friend Bob Ney. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Gonna take a quick break. Right back to wrap things up. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1912. Between 6,000 and 7,000 workers walked off the job on strike against the Canadian Northern Railway. Their issues included low pay, worker safety, and the poor quality of the food and housing provided by the railroad. The International Workers of the World, or the Wobblies, had founded a union of construction workers which led the strike. Most of the strikers were immigrant workers, including many Italians. They were a part of a wave of labor strikes that took place across Canada between 1911 and 1912. Along with the railroad workers, coal miners, textile workers, and shoemakers also went out on strike. In total, 1.8 million individual workdays were lost to strikes in 1911 alone. The Canadian Northern Railway strikers were able to shut down 400 miles of track construction. They also posted picket lines in cities including Seattle, Tacoma, Minneapolis, and Vancouver to discourage scabs from taking their jobs. The strike wore on for 5 months. Strikers faced severe repression from the company and their government. Finally, the strike was broken. During the strike, Wobbly organizer Joe Hill visited one of the worker camps in British Columbia. Inspired by what he saw, Hill penned the lines to the song "Where the Fraser River Flows." The song was named after the longest river in British Columbia. The chorus of the song captured the spirit of the striking workers.
Where the Fraser River flows, each fellow worker knows, they have bullied and oppressed us, but still our union grows. And we're gonna find a way, boys, shorter hours and higher pay, boys. And we're gonna win the day, boys, where the Fraser River flows.
Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. Show. Check out our website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. So, again, another one of these moments, and it's remarkable to me that, you know, for years, you know, parents and teachers and schools were doing things that evidently weren't a problem until now. Evidently, there's a film on Ruby Bridges. I remember she was the 6-year-old girl who integrated, you know, schools down in New Orleans back in the 60s. There was a whole, I guess for years it had been a staple of this Pinellas County Black History Month lessons. I mean, for years. Well, now parents unhappy complain that it's going to, and I love this. This is right out of right wing, you know, talk theory. It's going to teach white children to hate themselves and to hate black children. It's going to teach them to hate them. And that's not the point of it. That's not what it's supposed to do. But, you know, again, you know, we can't have these things in schools. Just like, you know, we talked about the other day in Florida, this charter school. You had parents complaining about Michelangelo's David. It's pornography. It's been around for, what, you know, 600 years? I don't know that it got many people going. No, in fact, people used to send postcards. Now you've got the mayor of Florence, Dario Nardella. He has tweeted support to have the principal visit Florence, along with the museum that houses David, to come and see the actual statue and to show that it's not pornography. Because they're saying, look, anyone confusing this art with pornography was ridiculous. And it kind of is. But even if you do view it in that vein, even if you're outraged by the human body, it's not what pornography is. Just kind of throwing that out there. And not to mention, you know, as has been pointed out to me, you know, David's little David is just there, which is weird that parents didn't pick up on that. Anyway, just bizarre. And under the category of it's too gay. I mean, happy. I know, heaven forbids kids be happy. But under the it's too gay category, the song Rainbow Land, which I've never heard because I'm not a big country music fan. Evidently, this song with Miley Cyrus and Dolly Parton, which evidently is supposedly a great song. I have not heard it. It's a duet. 2017 it came out. It's now been, I guess, taken off of the, again, Wisconsin, you're trying to be Florida. It's now been taken off of the program at this higher elementary school in Waukesha, because evidently this teacher said, "Hey, we love this song. The kids loved it. They were happy singing it. It was great." And they had planned to perform it at one of their shindigs. And, well, evidently it was according according to the superintendent, the Waukesha superintendent, Jim Siebert. The song was determined, it was determined that Rainbow Land could be perceived as controversial. Not that it is controversial, but it could be perceived that way. And my mind goes, what part of it was, because I actually read through the lyrics and I'm going, it's not, there's nothing LGBT, there's nothing rainbow in it. There's no trans anything for you to ban. It's a rainbow. So yeah, that's what it was. They're banning rainbows. How crazy can we be? And finally, on the topic of rainbows, Ted Nugent, crazy right wing nut job draft dodger, if you will, avoided the draft, didn't dodge. I guess when you don't bathe for weeks at a time and you fill your drawers so that you look crazy so you can get out of it, I guess that's okay. But evidently he has, at the rally in Waco, called the Ukrainian president Volodymyr Zelensky a homosexual weirdo. He then called for a moment of silence for political prisoners in the gulags of Washington, D.C. because of jackbooted thugs in our own government. We're banning Rainbow Land songs where kids are going to be happy, and we're calling foreign leaders that, from a guy who is that. It seems to me, folks, and this is where, look, it seems to me all the worst people are doing some of the most horrible things and using our children as the cover. It's really, and I look at where we are, it's because Republicans don't have a policy agenda. There really isn't anything there but division. And look, I welcome policy. You know, as I talk with my friend Joe Walsh all the time about, you know, I wish we could argue about how do we make the best policy to make people's lives better. We're just fighting over who can exist and who cannot. Who's going to be banned and who's, well, accepted. Instead of the idea that I grew up that every person has the right to pursue their happiness. Life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. We're not that country anymore. And it's frightful. But the fact that I got to wonder what they would think of a Barry Manilow song, or who knows? How crazy is it going to get? I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you download the podcast wherever you get your favorite podcast. You'll find ours. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll see you back here next time.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay. WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.